March 26, 2018. Let's talk about the Pesukim that lead up to Kiryat Yam Suf. And leading up to Kiryat Yam Suf, and to a certain extent describing the beginning of Kiryat Yam Suf, we mentioned it, I think, a week or two ago, or 3 weeks ago. We mentioned there's this motif in the Pesukim of sight. We'll see that a lot. There's a lot of re'iyah in the Pesukim. We were talking about it for whatever reason at that point. I'd like to return to that. We'll see it. In fact, I would argue further, and I don't think we did this as much then, but we hinted at it, that this stress in the Pesukim of Moshe raising his mateh is also about sight. And I mean, I'll explain to you why I believe that as well. And that's what will get us going in terms of developing this important theme of sight and what it's doing here. I mean, it was quite a spectacle, but there's like almost an obsession with it. Anyway, so here, let's just take a look at the Pesukim to try to understand where I'm going with this. Ufar'o hikriv, right? It's Shemot Perek Yodal Pasuk Yod. Yod, so Paro's getting closer. Vayis'u b'nei Yisrael et einehem, and b'nei Yisrael raise their eyes. V'hinei Misraim nosi'a acharehem. So I've, of course, bolded it because there it is. I mean, it's already, they're raising their eyes. Vayire'u me'od. What is vayire'u me'od? It doesn't mean they saw, it means they fear. So there's something else, and we see it already from the beginning. It's an interesting thing. It's almost a play on words that will take place throughout over here. It's sight and fear, which in Hebrew is very similar. And they'll be linked to each other throughout. So they see the Egyptians, and as such, they fear the Egyptians. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael el Adonai, and they cry out to God. Vayomeru el Moshe. According to the Chachamim, this is a separate group of people who now turn to Moshe. Peshat and Pesukim is, they are just frantic. So they first cry out to God, and now they turn to Moshe. Hamibili en kevarim b'misraim lekachtanu lamut b'midbar. Ma zot asit elanu lehosianu b'misraim. What are you doing to us, Moshe? Did you need to bury us out here? Why didn't you just bury us in Mitzrayim? We already spoke to you about this. Why didn't you just leave us in Mitzrayim? Okay, so they're freaking out. What spurred their freak out? Looking at Mitzrayim, right? Looking at them, more specifically. Next, Pasuk Yod Gimal. Vayomen Moshe la'am. So Moshe turns to people and says to them, Al ti ra'u. Don't fear. Well, how could we not fear? We already know where we're going with this. Look at something else, right? Fear came from our sight. So instead of directing your sight at the Egyptians, direct your sight at God. Yeah. So Al ti ra'u hityasivu ur'u et yeshu'at Adonai. So, look at the redemption of God. Now, are we talking about physical seeing necessarily? No. I mean, Peshat, yes. Well, how are you going to see Yeshu'at Adonai? You're going to experience it. Yeah, I know, but he's telling. All right, I don't know. I think it's more than that. I think it's perspective as well. So you need to shift your perspective. Peshat, but I think even in Peshat, it's not just about, even initially as well, it's not because they saw and that triggered some sort. It's they saw and their perspective was one of panic. And now your perspective should be one in which you anticipate God. So already, calm yourselves because you're about to see it. Okay, Asher ya'aseh lachem hayom, ki asher item et Misraim hayom, that which you saw the Egyptians today, right? Lo tosifu lirotam odad olam. Won't see them any longer. So sight, fear, linked to each other. Onward. And now we get to the other sight, which I mentioned earlier, is raising the staff, which is very much, in my mind, connected to. Now, again, who's going to raise his staff? Moshe. Why is he going to raise his staff? God tells him to. Why does God tell him to raise his staff? God, Danielle?
Is it similar to the Amalek when Moshe
reads? It is. It is. You're either reading ahead, you heard me last week, or we think on the same wavelength. I'll accept the last one. That's what I said. I said last week, but I didn't say it in this fashion. But yeah, I mean, what do you mean by that? So what Danielle means by that is what the Chachamim say about Amalek, right? At Amalek, which is right after we get through Yam Suf, it's in source number 2, right? Moshe turns to Yoshua and he says, "You go fight against Amalek." in where are we? In Refidim. And I'm going to stand at the top and I'm going to take Mate Elohim Biyadip in Pasuk Tet in Perek Yod Zayin. And then the Pesukim describe when he raises his hand, Vaya Kasher Yarim Moshe Yado Vegavar Yisrael, ask the Chachamim in the Mishnah Masechet Rosh Hashanah, is it really that Vechi Yadav Shel Moshe Osot Milchama or Shavrot Milchama? Are they really causing the victory or the loss at war? Rather, says the Mishnah, when he raises them, people look at them and in turn think about God. Which means to say, in my mind, that's a reflection of this whole raising staff in general. Raising staff means everyone looks up. Everyone looks up and perspective is changed. And instead of looking at the Egyptians, instead of fearing because of looking at the Egyptians, I have confidence because I'm quote-unquote looking at God. Okay, so that's what goes on in these Pesukim. Let's just read them quickly. Vayomer Adonai Moshe, Matisaki Elai, Daber B'nei Yisrael V'Yisrael. I'm back up in source number one, Pasuk Tet Vav, Pasuk Tet Zayin, Ve'ata, and you, Moshe, harem et matecha, unte et yadecha al hayam, uvka'ehu. What's the word bika'ehu or uvka'ehu mean? Split it. Do we recognize that word from anywhere? Maybe not. That's okay. We will. At the very least, we see the word. It's going to come up again in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, right? Vayibake'u hamayim, the last words over there. It's splitting. We don't call it Biki'at Yamsuf. We generally call it Kiri'at Yamsuf. But the Pesukim described twice, Biki'ah. So it's an interesting word. I mean, I'm sure it's used in several places in the Torah, but there's one that we're going to call specific attention to. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, right? I skipped on the sheet purposefully. Vayet Moshe Yado al Hayam. He raises his hand over the sea. Vayolech Adonai et Hayam beruch kadim azak kol alala vayasim et Hayam leharava vaybakeu hamayim. So his hand is raised, and in turn, we have the splitting of the sea. Pasuk Chavav, again, raise your hand, Moshe. Pasuk Chavzayin, he raises his hand. Okay, so there's a lot of raising hand. We said, what's the significance? Again, a lot of the same, in my mind, about sight. Although it's not explicitly stated, that's what's going on. We're looking confidently up instead of backward, instead of to the side. Okay, and the culmination of it all, we know the Pesukim, Pasuk Lamed, Vayosha, Anunai, Vayoma, Uet, Yisrael, Miyam, Mitzrayim, Vayar Yisrael et Mitzrayim. Uh-oh, that's bad. Don't look at Mitzrayim. That's going to cause fear. But this time, Meta Sefet Hayam, they're dead. So as a result of looking at Mitzrayim and seeing them dead, we are empowered. Vayar Yisrael et Hayad Gedol Asher Asad Adonai Mitzrayim. Our perspective is shifted to one in which we see the might of God. And our fear is in turn directed at God. So what took place over here, and you know, this in and of itself for me is worth everything, is that Kiryat Yam Suf has this theme of sight throughout, especially if we read the Mateh that way. It translates into the appropriate fear, the appropriate perspective, and somehow, I mean, not somehow, we can kind of understand, that's truly important for Kiryat Yam Suf. For it happening, would Kiryat Yam Suf had happened even if we weren't fearing God? I imagine yes. What's the purpose of doing this?
What's the purpose of doing what?
Of making sure that we have the proper perspective. In other words, Kiryat Yam Suf is going to take place, I think. But we're making sure God has Moshe raising his staff and everyone looking at it. God has Moshe and the people keep looking upward. For what reason? I think to make this effective. In other words, I could do Kiryat Yam Suf in one of two ways. I can have Kiryat Yam Suf, and it happens, and it's done, and you know what you say? There was a strong wind that split that sea, and we were naturally in an amazing phenomenon able to pass through. It was a coincidence in which there was no divine involvement. That could have happened. And many miracles, I imagine, in history have happened that way. Maybe yes, maybe no. But it could have been what happened. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Martin Buber in his book Moses, he makes this point about miracles in general. He says miracles, even in Torah, are defined by the people's acceptance of them. Which means to say, you know, we can come back and try to rationalize it, but it's considered a miracle because the people in the moment perceived it and accepted it and understood it as a miracle. That's what happened over here. Why did it happen that way? Because, quote-unquote, our eyes were up. instead of to the side. Right? That's what's taking place over here. So eyes, vision, and in turn this fear is critical to Kiryat Yam Suf. We're not allowed to turn around. We have to instead be looking forward and up. When did we have that last, I don't know, last, another place, another critical moment in Tanakh? There's a mashchit of sorts taking place behind, it's Sodom, right? We're leaving Sodom, not we. Lot and his wife, what's his wife's name? I don't know. My son asked me this year what Lot's wife's name was.
Salt,
right? Good. I like that. So, in fact, that's what happens over there, right? They're leaving in Bereshit, Perek Yod Tet, in Source 4 here, Pasuk Yod Zayin, Vayikos Yamo Tamahusa. So the angels are escorting Lot and his wife Salt out of Sedom. Vayomer Himalet Al Nafshecha. So the angel says to Lot, run for your life. Al Tabita Harecha, don't turn around and look. Now, why is it bad to look? What's going to happen if you look? So I like that. I'm not sure if that's the only interpretation. It might be the simple interpretation. My suggestion now, I think that might be the simple interpretation. He doesn't want to see the destruction of people. I'm suggesting right now it will skew the perspective of the circumstance. In other words, this is supposed to be a circumstance in which you go out and you understand what's taking place behind you is a divine decree and action. Don't turn around and look at that. You're looking forward. It's kind of like looking at the Egyptians. You're gonna be nervous. And you're gonna.
Yam Suf, they saw them die.
So then afterwards, they were looking up at the Mateh the whole time. They saw them dead.
Right.
Over here, you're gonna turn around. You're gonna be.
You're gonna, want you to look.
But you're gonna be all fearful. In other words, in my mind, you turn around. It's the equivalent of looking at the Egyptians as they're running at you. You're gonna miss the whole moment. You're gonna miss the rush of being saved and being feeling as if that God is saving you. That's how I see it. And what God seem?
So why is the same word used by Abu or they feared the Egyptians and then they feared God
for this point,
yeah.
To say
how come not love God, how come not appreciate it?
Because I think the same thing is at play over here. In other words, your perspective is going to sway you either from the same emotion you would and should have toward God, instead you're going to have that toward the Egyptians. The same awe and fear, if your perspective is off because you're looking at the Egyptians at Kiryat Yam Suf, I mean, at this miracle, and then you're going to miss the whole thing. And I think it's the same thing going on over here as well. And that's why salt turns into salt, because she messes the whole thing up. In fact, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but it is, my father pointed this out to me in a different context this past year or 2 years ago, I don't remember, that this Rabbi Hanoch Waxman in the book Torah Me'etzion and Parashat Bo, he's got like 24 parallels between Yetziat Mitzrayim and the story of Sodom. He points out there are so many parables. Down to the most famous midrash. What's the most famous midrash? What did Lot serve the angels when they came in? Masot, right? Masa, and Rashi says, Pesach Haya. This is one of my most favorite stories about my son. He was in kindergarten, I think, and he said to his teacher, I don't understand, does it make sense? He said, we weren't in Egypt yet. And she said, your daddy's a rabbi, go home and ask him. And so he had to go back and talk to her. That was a tough one. But down to that, in other words, the suggestion over here is instead of looking at this as a silly midrash, there aren't any, if you ask me, but Rabbi Hanoch Waxman argues, well, there's a depth to this midrash. Read the Pesukim. There are so many parallels in terms of motif. You're running away from something. There's a destruction taking place over there. Words are very much parallel. The Yesiah, the Bayit, the Avdut, and so forth. And, you know, the question is what they're doing in terms of their association. For me, more than anything, I just find that intriguing. I would add to the list the fact that we look forward at Kriyat Yam Suf, and we don't look backward, and the same thing takes place here with Lot. Just a parenthetical point, but it's an interesting point nonetheless. So that, by the way, in this context, but you know, the spiritual people would give the following interpretation. Spiritual people would say that redemptions take place in the same way, just the coordinates change. So the reason they're parallel is for nothing other than that's the way redemptions take place. So today it's without looking back on your phone or something like that, because coordinates change, because reality change, but it's everything's going to take place in the same fashion because we have this cyclical type of approach to life and world and so forth. I threw that one in for the spiritual folk amongst us. Anyway, that's step one, two, and three or so. What I really want to do now is to get to my final point, and this is the point that most excited me in terms of this new perspective on Kriyat Yam Suf, and that is to notice again that we described it in the Pesukim as a Bikiyah, which in my mind got me triggered, and I found there's a midrash to this effect, to none other than Akedat Yitzhak. At Akedat, and it sounds like it's really out of left field. I mean, it is for now. But at Akedat Yitzhak, what happens is, it's out of left field unless you remember what we talked about Akedat Yitzhak earlier this year. But here in Bereshit Perek Yotet, Pasuk Gimal, Pasuk says, Vayivaka ase ola. So there's that Bekia Lashon. So you say insignificant. You say, it means he split. You're overdoing this. If I said this in a high school classroom, they'd kill me. But, you know, you gotta let it develop here for a little bit. So that's already. Now, that's not me. The Chachamim draw this to our attention in source number 6. It's a Michilta. Michilta derbi Shmael b'shalach v'yihi parasha gimal. Rebi Bana Omer bizchut mitzvah she'asa avihem Avraham ani ekra. Should be two separate words. Lahem et hayam. It says, because of the mitzvah that Avraham did, I will do Kiriat Yam Suf. Shene'emar ve'vaka ase ola uchtiv ve'ibake'u hamayim. So the Chachamim are somehow linking Avraham at the Akedah to Kriyat Yam Suf, which I think the link is pretty simple. Avraham's sacrificing, and in turn, I'll quote-unquote sacrifice.
Well, he starts the Shambud, so to speak, and then they end it.
I got you, but the way the Midrash is speaking out is it's Midah connected Midah in terms of the saving. Since he did this mitzvah, I'll save
mitzvah,
you guys.
The Akedah. But
that's leading up to the Akedah. I mean, what else is it, right? In fact, there's another midrash. This one I think everyone's familiar with, right? This midrash in Tanhuma is Avraham and Yitzhak are making their way to the Akedah. And the Chachamim, as they always are, sensitive to extra words or extra descriptions in Pesukim. How many days' journey is it? Vayhi, Vayom HaShelishi, Vayisayinav, 3 days. What happened over the course of 3 days? So what I always like to point out is silence. That's what I always like to point out. That's what we're told until breaking, until one conversation, whatever. But more than anything, we don't know what happened on those 3 days. Say the Chachamim, let's imagine what happened on those 3 days. Say the Chachamim, over the course of 3 days, it was a constant battle between Avraham and Yetzer Hara, Satan, whatever it is, probably Yitzhak as well. Says this battle with Satan, and Satan's doing all these things in order to throw him off. One of them being that he puts this big lake or river in front of him, and Avraham's passing through this river. I mean, this is the imagination of the Chachamim, but we have it just as a midrash. You'll appreciate it so much more now, I think. And Avraham and Yitzhak walk into it, and the water's up to their nostrils, and they say, "Ba'umayim ad nefesh," and God, therefore, makes Yabasha. So you have, in the eyes of the Chachamim, the first Kiryat Yam Suf took place with Avraham's. All I'm doing over here is that the Chachamim are already drawing our attention to paralleling, to connecting Kiryat Yam Suf and Akedat Yitzhak. But what's the connection? So they're both about some sort of sacrifice. Chachamim aren't even really talking about the sacrifice of Am Yisrael. Why are we connecting? What sort of connection? Vaibaka is a word that connects. Is there a thematic connection? So there is, I think. I want to just mention another one and then get to the punchline. Another one is, what's the critical moment of Akedat Yitzhak?
The Malach.
The Malach. What's visualize it for me. Describe it to me. So one more time. Avraham raises his arm in the air. He's got an outstretched arm. So in my mind, that's the same imagery. That's the imagery of Kiryat Yam Suf. It's an outstretched arm. So you got imagery similar, you have wording that's somewhat similar, but more than anything, you have the critical point of sight. Akedat Yitzchak is filled with the word and the mention of fight, of sight. That's later, but that's, yes.
No,
from the Chachamim, that's gotcha, which can and should be explained in light of this, but I'm not going there right now. Firstly, let's go backwards. Let's really go to the end. The end is not only sight, but it's sight and fear, exactly the way we began the class. We began the class that you're in Mitzrayim, and sight translates into fear. You look at the Egyptians, you're scared of the Egyptians. You look at God, you have fear and awe of God. How does Akedat Yitzchak end? So if you go to page 3 here, right, Pasuk, Yod Bet, Vayomer, the Malach says to Avram, Al tishlach yadecha al ha'na'ar. Don't touch him. Now I know that you are fearing. You have yirah. What's Avraham doing in the moment of his fear, of his yirah? Vayisa Avraham et enav vayar. He's looking. As a result, Avraham calls the name of the place. Pasuk Yodal vayikra Avraham shem ha-makom ahu Adonai yireh. Asher yamer hayom behar Adonai. Yerae, sight, is a core. I mean, the name of the place becomes something having to do with the sight of God or seeing God. Akedat Yitzchak is about fear translated with sight.
Yom Mitzvah Pesach is to be seen in the Mikdash.
Well, I mean, that's all the Muad'Dim to a certain extent. Yeah. I thought you were going to say that we're supposed to be seen as if we left Egypt of some sort. Yireh tasmo,
but you do shalosh regalim, you have to be seen.
Yireh kol zechur echa et pnei Adonai
Elohecha. That's different,
really, yeah. No, it's the same thing. You have to be seen in front of God.
Right.
Why?
Okay, but give me a chance here. Now, okay, so let me catch you up to date before we really bring it home on this matter. But to catch you up to date, in Kiryat Yam Suf, there's sight, which translates into fear, which is what it was all about. Why was that what Kiryat Yam Suf was all about? Because you would have missed the moment if you were looking at the wrong thing. In other words, if you had the wrong perspective. Kiryat Yam Suf was either miraculous, was the, we did this one year, we talked about, I think Rabbi David Foreman does it much better than I ever will. He talks about how you can find in Kiryat Yam Suf references to all of the days of creation, or to most of the days of creation, right? He talks about the fact that there's water that's split, and talks about the fact that there's dry land, talks about the fact that there's the Ruach Elohim al Penei Hamayim, and so, that's over here, that's blowing. So, I mean, you have a moment which was paramount to creation in the world, but it could have been completely missed if we were looking the wrong way. If our perspective was off, the moment is missed. Why do we need all this sight at Akedat Yitzchak? So if you recall, when we talked about Akedat Yitzchak earlier this year, one of the half dozen times, so what I suggested was that Akedat Yitzchak, as Kant and many of the philosophers and scoffers at traditional Torah are want to point out, was Akedat Yitzchak a success or a failure of Avraham? I mean, it's a very important and difficult ethical and moral dilemma. Avraham and Torah is against child sacrifice. We don't believe in such matters. It was probably one of the core messages of Moshe, of Avraham. He's running around telling people, what the heck are you doing? Why are you sacrificing children to gods? We don't do that. And then his God turns to him, or the God turns to him rather, and says, slaughter your son. What? And his success seems to be in his willingness to do so. Shouldn't he have protested? Didn't he protest at Sidom? Or is that what you're going to say?
No, I was saying, is there any connection between the fact you're talking about sight and fear over here? And after that last test of Akedat Yitzchak, it says about Abraham, Ki Yedah Hashem,
that Hayadati Ki Yireh Elohim Ata.
He fears God.
But isn't that ironic?
He loves him, and he fears him.
But isn't that ironic? Right. Is that fear of God? If you don't follow his... what you should know. So, in fact, one of the approaches to this matter is the amazingly, cryptic, but it's there, if you read it carefully, approach of Harambam. And Harambam has this whole thing as being a riddle in terms of Nivuah. Harambam has this as Avraham initially misunderstood what God was testing him with. The test was in understanding prophecy. It's only Harambam could do this, turn everything into an intellectual mistake and perception and whatever. But the whole thing was God never commanded him of that. It was some sort of cryptic message. Avraham initially thought it was that, and he comes out victorious because he kind of, something clicked and he figured it out. Okay, that's Harambam's approach. What we suggested, and I think it's really critical and relevant, is that there are several sites of Avraham. And if you recall, what we're doing with sight is our own perspective. So as we're leaving Egypt, you have a choice right now, says Moshe to the people, says God to the people to a certain extent. You can either see this through your own lenses or you could see this through the right lenses. You're either looking at the Egyptians and thinking this is some sort of, you know, thing that happened and you're fearful the whole time and it just happened, or you're able to see this and understand because you put on that perspective what actually happened. Well, what happens at Akedah Yitzhak? Avraham is constantly looking and seeing and sensing matters on his own through a different light. It wasn't things that were clear. It was things that were very much equivocal. So Avraham, for example, here in Pasuk Dalet says, "Vayom haShelishi, vayisa Avraham et Eina vayaret haMakom merachok." On the third day, he raises his eyes and he sees the place from afar. Now, was he supposed to see the place from afar? How was he supposed to find this place? God was supposed to have shown the place. So how did this happen? So Rashi, of course, tells us that there was a cloud on top. The Pesukim don't describe that. Pesukim say that Avraham sees it. It means that Avraham is cleverly using his own perception over here. He's able to get into the system and understand matters, not tweak with God's will, but be able to perceive and see it with the proper perspective. In fact, when we mentioned this in that context as well, when his son asks him, when Yitzhak says, well, where's the animal? He says, Elohim yir elo hasele olabini. Now the question is he lying to his son? Or does he perceive with the proper perspective that that's going to happen? When the Balak comes to him and tells him, don't slaughter your son. Well, what happens? The Timura of his son, Yitzhak, is the Ayala Hane Hazbasivach. Did God command him to slaughter that, to take that? It's Vayisa'ina Vayar Vine Ayala Hane Hazbasivach Bekarnav. It's Avraham who's able to intuit, this is the opportunity to slaughter this. This is what was meant to be all along. Which means to say, somehow, in some fashion, that moral impossibility of Avraham was solved by his perspective, by his own individual perspective. He's working within a system in which God told him something which is daunting, to say the least, in which he thinks he can't accomplish it. But he's able to see it carefully, and time, and again, and again, and again. Akedat Yitzhak is filled with sight, and the sight leads directly into appropriate fear of God, because it's actually comprehending. So it means that both Akedat Yitzhak and Kiryat Yam Suf, if taken without careful, what I call it, purposeful sight, if you just experience life and the things that you come across in life in a audience fashion, just taking it in without having a purposeful sight, you'll miss it all. And these are critical moments in our history. So Kiryat Yam Suf, if it was just a sight, but my sight was on the Egyptians, I would have no understanding of what took place. I would miss the whole recreation of the world. Of sorts. I would miss, we did a different class in which we saw all the makot. The makot again, because I had the wrong sight. Akedat Yitzhak is very much the same. So the Pesukim parallel the two to drive home this point. You want to understand, you want to perceive, you want to be able to experience life and God's actions in their fullest? Well, make sure you're purposefully looking. Yeah, Rebecca?
So then what's the explanation of the phrase Kiyere Elohim on top? Because if it's not, okay, so it's not that Abraham is shows that he fears God because he was so close to sacrificing his son. But then if you're saying that it's because he has the right perspective, then it's kind of like he's just playing a game as he's leading his son up to the Mizbeach, knowing that he's not going to sacrifice him. And then there's no question about
so I gotcha. So obviously it's complicated, and we won't be able to figure this out. Here's how I see it, though. It's that it wasn't a game. It's that this is a microcosm for a huge challenge. And the challenge is, I'm walking to the beat of Torah and Mitzvot. I'm putting in 21st century terminology. I'm walking to the beat of Devar Hashem, let's say it that way. But at the same time, if I don't have a unique perspective, I'm going to miss out on the whole, I'm going to end up slaughtering my son. In other words, if I don't understand how to intuit within this system and see things in the proper light, so then I'm just not. So it's not that he's playing a game. He is taking his son, and I'm not going with, you know, with a Kierkegaardian acceptance of the absurd. I'm not doing that. I'm saying he's going, and he has on some sort of comprehension, some sort of perspective in which he intuits. Elohim yireh lo haseh le'olah b'ni. But he didn't say that. You don't think God's lying to you, but he knows something.
If Abraham already knows exactly the opposite of Kierkegaard, he already knows that it's not going to happen. So, you know,
What I'm saying is this is a microcosm for life more than anything, and it's not a game, it's a challenge. Do you follow? Knows the challenge of Abraham is in short, is instead of turning to God and saying this is ridiculous, instead of a Sodom episode, he says, I'm gonna go with this, and I'm gonna figure out within the system how to make this work. Do you follow? In other words, in Sodom, he wants Abraham to counter him. At this point, Abraham's come to the point where he's living his life, and he doesn't have to counter. He doesn't have to ask that question. He says, I can work with it. So it's a challenge more than anything. He knows it's going to, but he has to see it. He has to know how to intuit it. That's my understanding of Akedah. And the exciting thing for me now is that's my understanding of Kiryat Yam Suf. Kiryat Yam Suf would have been missed if there wasn't the appropriate side.
If we accept the parallel between the two episodes,
yes.
Then what is the deficiency in the Akedah story that is coming to recur here to fix?
So, I mean, firstly, it doesn't need to be. The Torah does stress things. No, the Torah will strengthen points. Secondly, it's a different angle. The first one is about our life as moral Jews. The second one is theological, is appreciating God's presence. I mean, they're very different. One's about my life in terms of action. That's Kedai Yitzchak. How do I act vis-a-vis Torah and Devar Hashem if it seems to run counter to what I know He wants me to be doing? And the other one is, what was that? Was that God or was that nature? Do you follow? In other words, it's going further in terms.
How do they connect them?
Oh, the Chachamim's connection. I'm just using Chachamim on this. Let me just stress that the Chachamim are connecting it just by saying that Avraham's actions merited Kiryat Yam Suf. So you'll tell me the depth of the Chachamim is me. I'm not sure about that. I just use the Chachamim. I have a student in Flatbush this year, who tells me that when I do these sorts of things, he says it sounds more like an English class than a Tanakh class. So I take it with a grain of salt. But the way I counter it is by showing him Midrashim as I go ahead. So I say, well, this parallel sounds a stretch to you. The Chachamim did it already. So I said, so I don't, you know, we can discuss what the message is, but the fact that I'm building these connections, again, the connection, the principle, the core principle is sight, standing, or meaning translating into being purposeful with your perspective. There are two manifestations. I mean, there are dozens, but these are the two that we're discussing. Number one, how do you appreciate what God does in the world? Kiryat Yam Suf. Number two, how do you follow God's word in challenging circumstances by shifting your perspective, by having the appropriate perspective? That's Akedah Yitzchak. I do think it fits because it's sight. I don't know. I mean, if you have something interesting on it, I'll take it. It certainly adds to the sight, and these two episodes are filled with it. There's no.
So totally effortless. It's a different angle. Okay. This concept, you didn't put in the pesukim, you had ted and kaf.
Yes.
In this, and that all ties into the whole concept of 72.
I'm looking forward.